This is the 10-Minute Contrarian Podcast. This is VP. We are a solutions-based podcast diving into the world of contrarian investing and alternative finance. You can find us hosted on the No Nonsense Forex YouTube channel, nononsenseforex.com, and podcast players everywhere. Episode 147 is going to be a very long one. Let's go ahead and skip ad reads. All the links are down below in the show notes. Please patronize those links where you can. It helps support this free podcast. But man, this could go long. And this is also going to be very controversial. And I want to say this at the top of the show, and I will repeat it again at the bottom of the show. Our superpower as contrarian investors is we don't get too emotional about what's going on in the world. Now, I know some of you do, but those of us who are actually good at this and can see things for what they are, we take those biases out. We all have biases, for sure. But we play the game that's in front of us, whether we like it or not. And then we take that information and we use it to our financial advantage. That really is the name of the game here, and I want everybody to be aware of this. At the end of the day, it's all about the facts and how we process them and how we use them to our advantage. End of story. All right? So you guys have heard me say before that oil is everything. Oil is life, and it is. There is another thing out there that is also everything, just like oil is. And that thing is demographics. And so many people, contrarian investors included, are absolutely unaware of just how important they are and just what kind of not only troublesome, but irreversible situation we are in on planet Earth when it comes to demographics. Everybody thinks it's the other way, which is so funny. But that's what we do here in contrarian land. You know, everybody thinks things are one way, but we over here, we know that that not only isn't true, it's the complete opposite. Now, I was first turned on to this when I read a book called The Accidental Superpower. This was, I don't know, 8-10 years ago. It was Peter Zeihan's first book. Now, you've heard me mention Peter here on the show and on the blog, and I almost do it too much. But look, man, predicting things is really hard to do. And there's already a swath of people out there who dismiss Peter because, also like Peter Schiff, he thinks Bitcoin is going to zero. So when people say things like that, you have groups like the Bitcoin Maxis, for example, who by and large are a bunch of emotional tampons. You know, they're like, okay, this guy is stupid. He doesn't know anything about anything. I'm just not going to listen to him. Well, what they don't understand is what I've been saying before about Peter Schiff is when it comes to the economy, he's gotten almost everything right. And I'm going to say it again. Predicting things is really, really hard to do. Most people get it wrong all the time. He has gotten it mostly right, as has Peter Zeihan. And he has done it with a scary amount of accuracy. And how has he done it? Well, he said back in that book that he actually predicted the Russia-Ukraine war, like to the month almost. And he also said that, you know, everybody's sitting there thinking that we're in the United States, we're going to hand the torch over to China as the next superpower. You know, and everybody's all concerned and dreading it and stuff like that. And Peter was the only one I ever saw who came in and said, no. That's actually not true at all. China is completely cooked. And you guys just don't know it yet. And then he also said countries like Germany, you know, the industrial and financial power of the EU, is also cooked. And they are at some point, just like China, going to have to deindustrialize. Fast forward to 2024, all of these things are currently happening. Why? Because he understands demographics. That's how important they are. They're so important, you can actually predict things that will happen in the future and predict things that are completely contrarian to the way everybody is thinking right now. So do you think financially that might be an important thing to understand? Because I do. You know, we're all sitting here trying to get ahead of it. Now, we're all trying to front run the inevitable. That's what we're doing here. And if you can understand demographics even a little bit, that is a huge, huge advantage for you that 99.99999% of the world is not going to have. So let's take as much time as we need here in episode 147 to at least give you a primer, because I've been studying this for a while. I'll tell you right now, yeah, Peter's books aren't even the best resources, in my opinion. I've read several books on the topic. There's one, let me go ahead and find it. I read all my books on my phone nowadays. Let me dig it up. It is called Empty Planet, The Shock of Global Population Decline. And again, this is where you have to kind of put emotions away. The guys who wrote this book, they are quite liberal. I am not. Hell, Peter's liberal for the most part. But you have to pay attention to the facts because that's what matters. And this book does such a good job of taking us all the way through history and bringing us all the way to how we got here, because where we're at right now is not in a good place. Despite what the United Nations and some of these other places might say, you know, they think we're dealing with overpopulation and a drain on resources and things like that. And that actual, that prediction is their base case for a lot of things they do. But a lot of things they're doing are completely wrong because they're not looking in the right direction. So based on the books I've read about this and the further research that I've done over the years, let me try to distill all of this for you as best I can. So for most of the planet's history, no matter where you were in the world, most people lived in rural areas. Now, in those areas, it is beneficial to have as many kids as possible because, especially back then, half of them weren't even going to make it to age five, but it was free labor. And you needed that free labor simply to survive. Even though these extra kids were extra mouths to feed, it didn't matter. You know, the work they were able to do and put in more than trumped any extra consumption they were bringing to the table. But through all this, we had a very nice, steady, slow growth in population because the amount of kids people were having pretty much joined up with the lower life expectancy that was going on back then. But then, and fans of the 10-Minute Contrarian podcast and fans of my blog should know this answer. What happened to make that graph go from nice and steady and slow to parabolic back in the 1800s? It was oil. Oil led to technology. Oil allowed us to ship things all around the world. So if your area didn't have something you needed, now you did. Oil led to fertilizers, which just made everything better. So now while people were still having a bunch of kids, those kids were living longer, and that made the population absolutely boom. And this boom led to bigger cities. And with bigger cities, you have a better collection of intelligence, which leads to medicines and all these other things that allow people to live longer. And for about 150 years, this combination of factors led to unbridled population growth. Like, we were able to withstand wars and plagues and famines and things like that because it didn't matter. You know, for every one person we'd lose, we would gain two or three. And the economy, over time, for the developed world, has done nothing but go up and to the right as a result of all this. Now, in order to have a prosperous economy, you need a lot of producers and consumers. This balance is very important. If this balance ever becomes out of whack, you start to have real problems. So let's dive a little bit further into that, because I want to take a step aside here and talk about old people, retirement age people. You actually don't want to have a lot of these at the end of the day because they don't produce or they don't consume nearly at the levels that people younger than them do. You know, you want that nice 16 to 45 range and as much of those people as possible. Those are the people doing all the production. Those are the people doing almost all the consumption. You know, when you retire, you don't produce because you're not working. You don't spend as much because you don't need to, and you're saving just to make sure you don't run out of money. And in most developed countries, the government is actually paying for you to live, you know, through subsidies and programs and things like that. So you end up being a net negative. But for most countries, that's not a problem because there are still plenty of younger people there to produce and to consume. Or at least it was that way. It's not going to be that way for much longer. The levels of prosperity we have seen our entire lives are slowly coming to an end. How can this be? So I'm trying to think of the best way to set this up and explain it. So there's the magic number out there of 2.1. I want you to never forget that number, 2.1. In order to maintain a healthy society today, you need to replace yourself 2.1 times over. So you need to have 2.1 children. Now, the reason that 0.1 is there is to cover for the margin of error for people who may lose the baby during pregnancy or even lose the wife during pregnancy. That can happen. Or if that something happens to where that baby can't make it to the age of five. You know, it doesn't happen a lot, but that's where that 0.1 comes from. All right. But you as a country do not want to drop below that 2.1 level. And for the longest time, this was not a problem at all. We were way above that, no matter where you were. Even as cities got bigger, because cities make that number go down a lot. In cities, you know, kids no longer become a source of free labor. Kids are now a complete drain on your money and your time. But again, that wasn't a big problem because you still had a large enough rural population that was cranking out a ton of kids. And even though the people in those areas were moving to the cities, you still had a lot of people in rural areas to cover that margin. And then some of the people in the rural areas would move to the cities to work. You know, so that number started to go down some, but it was still at pretty healthy levels for almost everywhere. So number go down, but still not a problem. But then, in the past probably, 50 years or so, we have had a number of factors converge. Now, these factors on their own probably wouldn't be a huge deal, but when you mix them all together, they become a really, really huge deal. And these factors alone have taken us from very healthy numbers to just about every single developed nation on Earth dropping not only below that 2.1 threshold, but well below, like holy shit below, that number today. There's a place where you can go see all this. I'll talk about that in a moment, but let's talk about those factors real quick. I think that's important. So number one, when you have all this prosperity happening at the same time and all this technology coming around, you end up with not just some people moving to the cities, but almost everybody moving to the cities. Because if you had a choice, who would want to like toil away on a farm all day when you can go to the city and have opportunity and money and things to do and people to meet? You know, it's an obvious choice over time. And so this is not what you want, demographically at least. And then during this time as well, in the last 50 years, women became a lot more empowered. They started to have a lot more choice in what they do with their lives. They started working a lot more, and it turns out if you give your average woman a choice, whether they want to have a lot of kids or only a few kids or zero kids, they're going to choose those latter two options more often than not. You know, when they don't have a choice, because that's just how the patriarchal system is, or you live on a farm and you need those kids to survive, well, yeah, they're going to have a lot. But if you take those two things away, and you give them an open choice on how many to have, they're going to have less. You know, in some cases, a lot less. So, okay, now you have number going down really fast. And that's not good. But even worse than that, on the other end of things, because of all this technology and, you know, governments paying old people to live, old people are living a lot longer, which, you know, we all love our old people, but demographically, this is the last thing you want. You want as few old people as possible. You don't want more, and you certainly don't want them living longer. You know, you kind of want to get them out of the pool as soon as you can, but we have done the opposite. And then the final factor, and contrarians, you should already know this, is that over the past 50 years, our money has gotten a lot worse. And if you're on Twitter, you've seen these graphics pop up all the time. You know, what an average salary could have gotten you 40, 50 years ago is absurd compared to what it can get you now. It can't get you anything now. You know, you could have a nice house, a couple cars, you know, a Big Mac for 69 cents, you know, and you had enough money to where your wife could stay at home and take care of the kids. You know, that's how I grew up. But doing that is really hard now. So you take those combinations of things and you have these societal shifts too, to where people just don't want to have kids. So you're in your late 20s and you just got married, or you have a live-in girlfriend and you might want to have kids, but you're in this tiny apartment. You can't afford a bigger house. And now you want me to have children? We can barely fit a dog in here. How are we going to fit, much less afford, children? Much less more than 2.1 of them. It's not happening. And so if you're ever wondering why so many countries fell below this 2.1 level and why it is only going to get worse, there's your reason. Unless all of these factors were to reverse and start going the other way at the same time, which is impossible, it is only downhill from here. Because again, you have to have a healthy amount of producers and consumers. And even if those numbers go down and this back and forth is still in balance, it doesn't matter, because you have less of it than you did before. Therefore, your numbers are going to be down. Therefore, your prosperity is also going to be down. You know, you might think technology is going to save the day with robotics and AI and things like that, but there's a really big problem. AI and robots don't buy things. You notice how Japan has been kind of stuck in neutral for the last 30 years? Yeah, this is a big part of it. Their demographics are terrible. And if you think about why, it makes total sense. It just verifies everything I just got done telling you. Almost everybody in that country has moved from the country to the city. You know, Tokyo is the biggest city in the world now, in these tiny little apartments. People are working 6 days a week just to maintain the lifestyle they currently have. I mean, come on, yeah. Where the hell are all these kids going to come from? And they've been able to replace a lot of things with, you know, factories overseas and robotics and technology and things like that. But unless you have more Japanese people to consume things, which they don't have, then your economy is going to look more like Japan's has for the last 30 years. Great with technology and advancement and having a first world society, but because of their demographics, it just doesn't matter. Now, the good news, at least short term, is if you fall below that 2.1 number, it doesn't automatically mean you're screwed. It means you're about to be screwed. But these things do take time. Like, because old people are living so long, you're going to see the overall population numbers rise, not fall like you think they would. When it comes to that overall number, life expectancy really plays a part. So you might see the world population go up, or you might see the population in your developed country go up and say, what is VP talking about? The numbers keep getting higher and higher. That's not the number you're looking for. You're looking for the population growth rate, the replacement rate. Now, those of you who are fans of my other podcast, the Trading Psychology Podcast, you might remember me talking with Rob. And he said, you know, he was very bullish on the economy overall, because he says, as long as the population keeps growing, the economy is going to keep growing as well. And I had to jump in and say, Rob, I don't know if you knew this, because really nobody knows this. You know, the things you're learning today are just like, it's such underground information. But I was like, Rob, we stopped growing a long time ago. I think 2009 was probably peak population growth. And I think I was wrong on that. I think we entered peak population growth well before that. And he was like, oh, well, if that's the case, then I'm not as bullish. And look, again, we have some time until this thing really turns over and everybody starts to feel it. Only the countries that are the worst demographically are starting to feel it now. You know, your China's, your Japan's, Germany, South Korea is about to get there. Most of the European Union is going to get there pretty soon, too. United States, we saved ourselves a little bit because our baby boomers had a lot of kids, had a lot of millennials, while most countries' boomers did not. So long term, the U.S. is screwed, too. If you need proof of this, our Zoomer generation is the smallest generation we have ever had in our history. But these things do matter, and people in the economic sector, you know, high up, they know this, and that is why places like India and Mexico have gotten so much money shoveled into it in the past, like, 5-10 years. Because their demographics, even though, believe it or not, both of those countries have dropped below the 2.1 line, they had a lot of kids before that. So after the show, I want you to go down to the show notes. I'm giving you a link. It's an awesome link. You could really have some fun with this. It's from Wikipedia, and it shows every country, and it shows where their replacement levels are. And then what you can do is you can click on those countries, and you can see their demographic charts. And it's really, really interesting. If your chart looks like a Hershey's Kiss, which is going to be Mexico and India, that's really good. That's really healthy. If it looks like a wizard's hat, that's like amazing. But that's mostly going to be, and you're going to notice this too, when you see every country that's over 2.1 right now, it's mostly countries with very underdeveloped economies. So it matters a lot less. You know, as far as countries who are over 2.1, and in some cases well over 2.1, you're going to see a lot of your poorer Middle Eastern countries and a lot of your poorer African countries. Now, why are the numbers so high for places like that? Well, they're the opposite of what we just talked about. If you want to debate any of the things I just said, look at these countries. These countries are predominantly still very rural. The life expectancy is much shorter. You know, they don't have typically programs to keep their older people living longer. And women still don't have much of a choice in these countries. It can be rough for women in some of these countries. And that book I just told you about, I remember an anecdote they told me about, I can't remember the country, it was in Western Africa somewhere. It wasn't Nigeria, it was a more or less developed country. And they were talking to a husband who had 7 kids. And he's like, look, if I tell my wife not to move, she can't move. You know, that's the family dynamic we have. And to no surprise, it's families like that that have a ton of kids. But again, the drawback here is most of those countries don't have significant enough economies for it to really even matter. The ones that do, all lower than 2.1. And in some cases, way lower. So when you click on these countries, you're not going to see a Hershey's Kiss. You're not going to see a wizard's hat. You're going to see what kind of looks like maybe like a lumpy cylinder to where things are kind of straight up and down. And in some of those cases at the very bottom, where like the younger kids are, the younger generations that we're relying on to produce things and consume things, they're really small. You know, you might have thought that China was just going out of control with their population boom. No, not at all. Especially because you add the fact that they had that one-child policy happening about 40 years ago, and that was a death blow. You know, they thought it was a good idea at the time, but demographically, they cut their own heads off with that. And if you click on them and you look at their population graph, you will see a very weird, amorphous-looking, I don't even know how to say it, shape in their graph, and that's what this is due to. Now, you might have seen their population grow a lot over the past 30 years, but that's because, like I said before, these things take time to roll over. But when they do, it's not like we're going to go back to the way it was before. It's never been this way. And all we have ever known is nothing but unbridled prosperity, mixed with a couple of small setbacks here and there that we have always been able to recover from easily. But because of all the factors I just talked about, we are fairly close to this never being the same way ever again. And there's nothing you can do about it. We can't tech our way out of this. Any positive advancements we might have are always going to be fighting this negative demographic issue that it never had to fight before. It was always up only. And that's all we have ever known in our lifetime. And we need to be prepared for this. Before I get into how to prepare for this, here comes the real controversial part, is how countries are dealing with this and how countries are trying to fix this. Now, not every country, but the majority of developed nations out there. You know, they've tried things in the past that have worked a little bit, like paid maternity leave, like tax breaks for people who have more kids. Because trust me, developed nations, the people at the very top of these nations have been aware of this problem for a while. So they have tried to fix it. And the things I just spoke about, that does fix it for about maybe 10, 15 years. But then all of those other factors, especially the part about our money getting worse, still just makes it, you know, even with a year paid maternity leave, doesn't fix the problem. People still don't want to have kids. And one of the factors, and I wasn't even going to bring this up, but I'll go ahead and bring it up now, is religion. A lot of religions, especially the more popular ones in this world, encourage having a lot of kids. In the West, that was generally Christianity. Christianity was very against things like adultery and degeneracy, and they were very pro having a lot of children. And the world has gotten away from that. And again, if you think we're going back to that at any significant level, we're not. Like, that genie's just out of the bottle. You know, again, you got to put your emotions aside and just deal with the facts. You could sit there and come up with all these reasons why you think this is. You know, we could do that all day. But is that helpful? No. Now, you do have other countries who are still quite religious and, you know, with still have all those other factors working in their favor in terms of population growth. And so if your country has none of those things, and it's pretty obvious that it's never going to get better because your native citizens are not going to be having a lot more kids anytime soon, what do? You have to survive somehow. You can't just allow things to crash. You got to start taking people from these countries with high birth rates, and you need to start bringing them in to your country with low birth rates by way of immigration. Like, you have to. Legal or illegal, it doesn't matter. You are going to need them. Bottom line. This is one of those issues where I lean a lot more liberal, not because of feelings, but just because of the pure facts of the matter. Whether you like it or not, it doesn't matter. We are going to need them. We are going to need them to produce and consume and have children of their own. Period. Because as much as you may not like it, the alternative is worse. And this, especially now, is a very hot button issue with a lot of people. Now look, there are some countries out there that say, no, you know what, we're going to stay the way we are. We're going to keep our culture the way it is. And that's going to be that. So, you know, look at the countries that are very homogenous. You know, Japan, perfect example. China, another really good example. And then you have certain countries like Bulgaria and Hungary who have decided to not let anybody in. And that's fine for now. But you are also signing your death warrant for the future at the same time. It's unfortunate. Again, we wish it wasn't this way. But the natives of these countries have not done a good enough job replacing themselves, and nor are they going to. And they have done such a bad job. But I'm not blaming them. You know, we've talked about all the reasons why this is. But at the end of the day, numbers are numbers, and they have done such a bad job that their birth rates have dropped so far below that 2.1 threshold that it's become terminal. Terminal. But the numbers are the numbers, and the numbers aren't going to reverse. So this is what you have to do. Now, sure, there are ways you can do this. You can say, okay, well, we're only going to take the best and brightest. Yeah, that's fine. But if you do that, you're not going to be bringing in enough. Now, a country that actually got ahead of this and started doing a pretty good job with it, despite what you want to say about their leaders, is Canada. Canada knew they were screwed. So they started taking in a lot of Indians and Chinese, some of which were already very educated and could contribute to the economy right away on a high-end level. But then you also need the low-end too, and this is where the Somalians came in. Now, the native population, of course, didn't like this. Why would you? You know, the world you knew is all of a sudden a completely different world now. The transition is going to be a tough one. You know, you're not letting all, you know, saints into your countries. There's going to be some criminals. There's going to be some people with dysfunctional values. And you're going to have to deal with that, of course. It's not a clean process, but it's a necessary process. Now, you can sit there and argue about the way these countries handle it once they're there. I totally get it. There's pros and cons for sure on all of that. Right now in the United States, the illegals that just came through are getting hooked up to where a lot of people, especially on the lower income levels, are like, well, what the hell? These people who just came in illegally are getting more than I'm getting. And that's a legitimate concern. And the only counter I would say to that is, we actually have a bit of precedence here to where, okay, look, we know they're coming in illegally. We know they may not want to adapt to our culture that much, but we still need them. That doesn't change the fact that we need them. And what we've learned before, or what we've learned in the past, is that if you push them out to the fringes and don't give them anything, you're going to have a lot more problems with them down the road than you would otherwise. You know, you look to places like Sweden or France when it comes to things like that. You might say, well, they should just be happy they're in our country and not in their other country that's getting torn apart. Well, okay, initially it's that way. But over time, you can't just give them nothing and put them in slums and piss them off and let that negativity fester over time and throughout generations. You can't do that. Again, it's unfortunate in some ways, but it's also necessary, completely necessary. This is how you need to approach it, or else you're going to end up wiping your own country out over time. It's pretty binary. Now, I will say if you do this the right way, it can actually become not so bad. You know, I think Mexicans in the United States are a good example. You know, when they were first coming in droves, it was tough. You know, that whole, you know, the Durker gerbs, you know, everybody's all mad they're taking jobs and taking up hospital rooms and getting free health care and things like that. But flash forward, maybe not even 10, 15 years later, I would say they've assimilated really well. Much of that animosity is no longer there. And they have assimilated so well that in a lot of cases, and this took no time at all, a lot of Hispanics over time start identifying as white. In the United States, and I have to do this every time I enter the United States, so I know this for a fact. Have you ever had to fill out a form and then tell somebody what race you are? And then you always see, or you see it now, Hispanic and white together. It's like Hispanic slash white. This is the reason. That's why they're together. So how you choose to handle it once it happens does go a long way. Now, it would be nice if governments just came out and said what I'm saying to you right now. But for some reason, they don't. And when you don't say anything, then people are just left to come up with reasons on their own. And those reasons are always going to be super negative. So I don't know why governments are so silent on this issue, but this is exactly why they do it. Now, in the United States, you might say, well, they're trying to get free votes in the process, and that might be a side benefit of why they're bringing them in now. I don't know, but I will say this, and you've heard me say this before. The United States, at least after this next recession comes and hits us, is primed to become even more powerful on a global scale because, again, we took everything that we used to make in China and we brought it over to Mexico, but Mexico can't make everything. The United States is going to have to start making things too again. And for the United States, that's a good thing because we design a lot of stuff here right now, but we don't make a lot of stuff here right now. And you really want to have both. And so we are going to start reindustrializing this country over time. And when we do, when these new factories get built or when these old factories reopen, we are going to need people to work there. Now, who do you think is going to want to work these factory jobs? A 25-year-old white Zoomer or black Zoomer or Asian Zoomer or second-generation Mexican Zoomer? Fuck, no, they're not going to want to work there. They're never going to take these jobs. But these new immigrants will. Love them or hate them, we are going to need them. And that's my point. That is the number one way and really kind of the only way to fix this problem. And so the countries who are doing this well are going to be the ones who survive 30, 40, 50 years down the road, while the other ones are going to completely disappear. Now, they're not going to completely disappear in that time, but it's not going to be happiness and prosperity over there. Less producers and less consumers means less of an economy than you had before. Simple mathematics. You have to bring in people and you have to get it right. Now, oddly enough, the problem that Canada is having is it's so expensive to live there now. A lot of the Indians and Chinese have realized that, you know, they're educated and they could probably go back to their country and live a really good life. And being a top one percenter in China or India is a lot better than being, you know, upper middle class in Canada And so it's actually going the other way now. There's a bit of a brain drain happening in Canada. You know, so over time, people are going to have to figure out this balance and get things right. And oh, by the way, the only other way to get your birth rate up and get your population up is to simply take over another country and make it yours, i.e. Russia. You know, you've heard all the reasons why Russia is claiming to invade Ukraine, and probably if they can, other countries too, and they all say, well, you know, we're worried about you guys invading us, so we need to close down all these gaps to make sure that that's not possible. It's like, really, dude, like, who's going to invade Russia in modern day? Why would anybody want to do that? That's not the reason. The reason is demographics and population. Back in the early 90s, they lost a lot of that when all of these former Soviet republics became sovereign. And Russia's demographics on their own are terrible. So this is the only way they can survive. So is this all starting to make sense now? I'm telling you, once you understand demographics, a lot of things in the world, whether you like them or not, at least they start to make more sense. It's when you don't like them and they don't make any sense to you is when you really start freaking out. So at the very least, hopefully I was able to explain a few things that you may not have been aware of. But regardless of what you do, you need to get this right. But again, if this is not done right, we are not in danger of going back to a world like we saw in the 1940s or 1950s or anything like that. We're in danger of stepping into a world we have never seen before. And we already know it's not going to be good. And we are slowly starting to see what that looks like in places like Japan and in the future in places like China and Germany. So what can we, as contrarian investors, do about this population collapse? Absolutely nothing. But the solution in the solutions-based podcast, at least for this episode, is to simply be aware of it. Understand what is going on. Understand why all of these other things are happening, and understand that this is absolutely going to be the norm going forward, because it's pretty much get that birth rate up or die. And if countries are just going to die anyway, we need to prepare ourselves for a world that is not going to look anything like the world we've been used to. Again, some good is going to come out of it, especially from technology and things like that. But maybe if you're looking long-term, consider, you know, moving your chips from countries who are dying to countries that still have another good 30, 40 years left in the tank. How long is it going to take for this thing to turn over? We don't know, but if we don't know the when, we at least know the what. And also, let's just say you better make your money now. And you better be setting yourself up right now to ensure that you are not losing and keeping as much money as possible as far as the money you are currently making and the money you will make in the future. Now, we have talked about a lot of those things on this show already, but in next week's episode, I'm going to give you a nice big checklist as far as things that you can do to financially prepare yourself while there is still time to do so. So those are your two solutions. Focus on the what instead of the why, because at the end of the day, the why doesn't even really matter. Save that for the lunatics. But then to also get ready, because I will do my best. Maybe I'm not the best source on this. I don't know, but I got some ideas in terms of ways we can all prepare ourselves for an inevitable future. And I will lay all of those things out the best I can next week. So I will see you then, and just a reminder, it might feel weird doing some of these things. You're probably going to be the only person you know doing them, but as we always say here, even though it's going to look like you're crazy, we are certainly not crazy. We are just early. And being early is pretty important here, no?